Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We're your hosts for this weekend edition. Also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. Now, a lot to talk about this week, even though it seemed to be a bit of a slower trading week. It was a shortened trading week in Canada. Very happy Canada Day to everybody in Canada. And it's going to be a shortened trading week next week due to July 4th. So very happy July 4th coming up to all our American listeners. There are a couple big picture themes that carry over to a wide range of different markets, sectors, and even can play into some of the economic data. So we're going to focus a bit more big picture here, and we're kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, we have you on the show about every month. And one of the big developments from this last month has been interest rates. Look, we went through the Fed meeting this month and we saw rates in a way kind of skyrocket for at least the very short period of time. Entering this month, the 10-year came in a little under 3%, moved the whole way up to almost 3.5% within a matter of about 2 weeks, and then pulled back again to 3% and has maintained above this 3% level. Jesse, when it comes to interest rates and the general direction and trend, still seems like the trend is up. What are you seeing, though?
Yeah, absolutely. The trend is up. It's a very clear pattern on the chart of, you know, higher highs and higher lows. But from the way I look at it, momentum is clearly waning. We see, and you know, my friend Michael Oliver's, probably the best at measuring this. And he uses indicators like price relative to the 50-day moving average, price relative to the 200-day, those types of things. When you use that and you isolate momentum, you can see rates are making actually lower highs in terms of momentum, even as price is making higher highs. And so that's just a sign that momentum's waning. And I also use other technical indicators like DeMarc indicators, which are typically trend exhaustion signals. And we've seen several of those as well. I think the 30-year Treasury yield recently created a weekly DeMarc sequential sell signal. So there are a number of these momentum and exhaustion signals kind of showing up at the same time you have fundamental signals like the copper to gold ratio rolling over pretty significantly. I mean, if you just look at that alone, it suggests the 30-year Treasury yield could fall back to test, 2.5%, which would be a pretty big fallback in that yield. So you also have the cyclical to defensive ratio within the stock market has been relatively weak for months now. So these are all signs that are essentially pointing to the potential for recession, which would be bullish for the bond market and help rates come in a bit.
Well, Jesse, you mentioned there some of the weakness we saw in copper relative to gold, and we've also seen a really strong U.S. dollar. Off mic, you'd mentioned you thought that not just rates, but maybe the U.S. dollar may be topping out. Do you think that would give a lift to the commodity sector? Because for the last month or so, commodities have kind of gotten beat down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's been astounding, right, how strong commodities have generally been in the face of a rising dollar. So, yeah, I do think, that headwind of the dollar, rising dollar, could turn into a tailwind. The dollar is essentially flat in interest rates, too. So for the past, month or 6 weeks, they both kind of put in a peak in mid-May, sold off, rallied to a new high. That new high is kind of the one that I was watching carefully because it does show some momentum divergences in both rates and the dollar. The thing with the dollar, too, is, the strength in the dollar is largely the result of two things, I think. One, the Fed's hawkish turn over the past, 12 months. They've been clearly communicating, that they were going to stop easing and start tightening monetary policy. But I think the markets have probably fully priced in what the Fed plans to do. And as the prospect of recession grows more clearer in people's minds, it's going to become clear that the Fed is not going to be able to get to, I think Loretta Mester was talking about 3.5-4% sometime next year. And, rolling off $3 trillion off the balance sheet, that's just not going to happen. So, the dollar's priced in a lot of hawkish policy over the next several quarters. And to the extent that that's not able to come to fruition, it's going to be bearish for the dollar. The other side of the dollar has been kind of the safe haven trade. It's benefited from a risk-off trade for the last, especially over the last 6 months. And so to the extent that that risk-off trade is essentially run its course, the first stage of the bear market in stocks has potentially run its course. And we could talk about this a little bit more, but I do think we can potentially see more of a bear market rally extend for another month or two. That would also, that renewed risk on trade could also be potentially bearish for the dollar.
Jesse, how are other central banks playing into this potential topping then for rates and the U.S. dollar? Because look, other central banks are now catching up to the Fed in terms of tightening policy. And they're a bit earlier on because the Fed has been through a couple rate hikes now.
Yeah, well, there's, we could talk about the ECB and the Bank of Japan, right, which have been dramatically, it's not hard to see why the dollar's been strong when you consider inflation in Europe is at least as troublesome as it is in the United States. And we still have, negative interest rates in Europe. So, and the Bank of Japan is probably pursuing the most dovish policy in the history of central banking right now with, yield curve control in the face of rising inflation. But when you see extremes like this, right, for the dollar to continue higher, the divergence in central bank policy would probably have to grow, meaning the Fed would have to get more hawkish and ECB and BOJ relatively more dovish. And I just don't see that happening. I think, the potential for a rapid reversal in the yen is one of the things that could help the dollar reverse. The yen has been so weak, and rightfully so, with the Bank of Japan printing so much money to keep yields where they are, that, and there's so many speculators short the yen. I think it's, one of the biggest net short positions we've ever seen. So there's a potential for a reversal there in the yen and a major short squeeze. I don't think it would take much of a shift, even the slightest shift in policy by the Bank of Japan to create that. I think there's also, when you talk about the inflation dynamics, it's important to point out that the inflation dynamics in Europe are much more, are probably more supply side driven than those in the United States, which have a greater demand component than anywhere else. And so, I don't think the ECB probably needs to do as much as the Fed probably needs to do to really rein in inflation. And so for a close in that divergence, or kind of fixing that divergence between ECB and the Fed, it probably doesn't, like the Bank of Japan, require that much of a hawkish shift on the part of the ECB at all, to any great degree, to really create a more significant shift in the currency dynamics.
It's a good point, Jesse. And if we saw the ECB and the Bank of Japan just do those slight shifts and we saw a bounce in those currencies and the euro and the yen, that would probably bring the dollar down as well, just because it's a teeter-totter, the dollar versus those other six key currencies, the yen and the euro being the key ones. You put out an interesting piece this last weekend, and it was titled "Wealth Destruction Has Been Massive This Cycle." And it references a chart that you included from the Daily Shot. I'd love you to expand on that concept. And it also got a little into stagflation, some quotes from Ray Dalio. Love you to expand on that for our listeners here.
Well, yeah, it basically highlights just how big the stakes are for the Fed right now. This is something I wrote about in my market comment on Saturday or last Friday. And basically, because household net worth relative to GDP is so much bigger than any time in the past, the stakes of this game that Fed is playing are greater than anything we've ever seen. So, we really need to understand, focus, not lose sight of the fact that the Fed has used asset prices, specifically targeting asset prices to try and create a wealth effect in supporting the economy for a long, long time now, right? I mean, it goes back to Alan Greenspan cutting rates in the wake of the 87 crash. There was no economic justification for doing so other than supporting the stock market. And ever since then, it's gotten more and more significant. And now household net worth relative to GDP is so much bigger than it was in the financial crisis, so much bigger than it was in the dot-com mania. If you think about it in those terms, right? After the dot-com mania, right? Alan Greenspan was so worried that the crash in the NASDAQ was going to potentially create another Great Depression that he lowered interest rates to 1%, created the housing bubble. So the crash in the stock market in 2001, too, resulted in a decline in household net worth relative to GDP of about 20%, which, pretty large, right? That was kind of freaked out Alan Greenspan. In the great financial crisis, household net worth fell about 70% relative to GDP, or equal to 70% of GDP. And that created, right, the Great Recession. The decline we've seen already in markets, because household net worth relative to GDP is starting from such a high level, we've already seen a decline of 60%. So the decline, the damage to household net worth relative to the size of the economy has already been as big as it was during the financial crisis. And this is only as the Fed has just begun to raise interest rates. Inflation is still a problem. And I think it's just very important for investors to recognize that the Fed is still targeting asset prices and targeting inflation. They need to bring down the value of your retirement account in order to bring in inflation. That's how financial conditions work. One of the largest components is corporate spreads and stock prices. And so they need stock prices and spreads to continue, spreads to widen, stock prices to continue to come down in order to try and rein in inflation. And the way they do that is by raising interest rates and creating this wealth destruction, because these reverse wealth effects are really the only tool the Fed has in battling inflation right now.
So it seems like right now the Fed is, I guess, succeeding in what they set out to do. It just hurts the consumer, hurts the individual. Jesse, it sounds like the Fed's going to keep on doing this, though. And even when we hear comments about market weakness and what the Fed has to say, even now what the Fed has to say about inflation, they're admitting that it's running hotter and running longer, and even some of their inflation expectations are generally higher when you look a year out. It seems to me like the Fed's going to keep on destroying some of this wealth, some wealth that was created way too easily. Should this be what we continue to expect, is a general meltdown in assets, whether they're financial or hard assets?
Well, I think it's a fantastic question. And it's really the dilemma that faces the Fed is facing right now. Jay Powell, this is something I've been writing about literally for 2 or 3 years now, at least, that eventually this monetary experiment is going to present the Fed with a decision between what I've proposed is, deciding between the devil and the deep blue sea. The devil is we're going to create another crash in asset prices to try and rein in inflation. And I'm talking about a decline in stock market of 50 to 60%, or greater, God forbid. We've seen a 20% decline in the S&P 500, and it's created, a massive decline in wealth, household wealth relative to GDP already. So, get where they need to go to rein in inflation, they might have to see a decline of 100% relative to GDP or greater, which is, you can just imagine how damaging that would be to the economy. But if they don't do this, right, they risk inflation expectations becoming unanchored, as they say. And, that is an inflation environment where you have a pattern of higher highs and higher lows in the inflation numbers. That means inflation could come down in a cyclical sense, but maybe it comes down from 8% down to 4%. and bottoms at 4 during a recession, but then just goes back up to 10 or 12 during the next cyclical upturn because they didn't do enough in this cycle to rein it in. And so I personally believe the Fed is not going to be willing to create a decline in asset prices significant enough to rein in inflation. They're not going to be, because they understand the consequences right now, right? I mean, you can just talk through, another 50, 60% decline in the stock market, would pension funds are already at, I mean, we've seen the greatest bull market, right, in history, 11 years and the greatest gain in that period. And pension funds are still underfunded. So the different crises that would materialize in the wake of another major crash in stock prices would create even bigger problems for the Fed. So I do think they are going to flip-flop again at some point. There's going to be, and I think it's when we really start seeing obvious signs of recession at the Fed. And markets are already, this is why I'm also bearish on the dollars. I think markets are already beginning to drop the terminal rate, the expected terminal rate of Fed funds, meaning we've already seen a peak in what markets are pricing in into how far the Fed's going to be able to tighten. And so I think all of these things point to a very, very bullish case for precious metals over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, Jesse, it's going to be interesting to watch this continued tug of war that the Fed is engaged in between fighting inflation, but trying not to rock the market so hard to the downside that they pull the economy into a recessionary period. We hear a lot of terms, recession, depression, inflationary recession, but we also hear stagflation. Stagflation, the ingredients are high inflation, which we have. Usually they were paired in the 70s with high energy prices, which we definitely have. Slowing growth, which we've seen in GDP estimates for the first quarter and the second quarter. And now we're starting to see the layoffs. Are we in a stagflationary period? And where do you think that takes us, if so?
Absolutely. I mean, stagflation is already here. We saw, first quarter GDP negative in real terms, but the underlying nominal numbers are still very strong. That's what stagflation is nominal numbers still look good, still look okay. But inflation is just running faster than retail sales, faster than consumers are able to spend. And so I think that's what stagflation is nominal looks okay, real looks not okay. After inflation. And that's where we're at. And I think what markets are missing is if you look at things like, five-year inflation forwards and 10-year break-even inflation and what markets are pricing in for inflation over a 5-10-year period, I think they're still dramatically underestimating the inflationary forces right now. And that bleeds through to all markets, right? It suggests that, dollar's way too high because the purchasing power of the currency is not going to be preserved as well as market participants believe. It means equity valuations are still way too high because earnings are going to be damaged by inflation. And interest rates are still too low because they're not anywhere close to compensating investors for what inflation is probably going to be over a 5-10-year period. So it kind of has effects throughout the entire markets. But I think most importantly, from where I'm sitting, it helps to explain why gold hasn't really taken off yet, because investors still believe that inflation is transitory. You look at any of these, imputed market-based inflation expectations, and they still say investors expecting 2.5% inflation over a long period of time. And when that changes, when market participants realize that inflation is going to be higher over the next 5-10 years than they currently expect, gold price will already be much higher by the time markets make that repricing in the bond market and tips and et cetera.
So in all fairness, the gold price has actually hung in quite well. And in this market environment, I think it's hard to expect anything, especially an individual commodity or asset, to fully buck the trend. However, oil, energy sector has done pretty well. But when we look at some of the other commodities here, Jesse, the other precious metal that we talk about a lot, silver, that is just hanging on to breakdown levels. We're recording this halfway through the day on Wednesday, and oh, silver looks like it, it's just holding on in that 20 and change region. But then last week we saw copper breakdown, and we've actually seen a little bit more weakness in general energy prices, including oil. What's this environment that just continues to push commodities down now? It seems, to your point, kind of a cash crunch that investors are facing.
I think it's important to make a distinction between secular forces and cyclical forces, right? So I think there are secular forces of inflation that are going to help play catalyst for a long-term bull market in commodities, precious metals, that'll last a number of years. I think, you know, if you think about this last bull market that we saw in financial assets, falling interest rates and rising valuations for software stocks and all these kinds of things, lasted a long time. And I think we're going to see something similar in commodities. But in the short run, we have these cyclical forces, right? So markets have spent the last 18 months or whatever pricing in inflation, rapidly recovering nominal growth and rapidly recovering price pressures. Now they're starting to wrestle with the potential for recession and the crimp to demand that's going to result in. And so that's what, you know, commodities and the bond market are both telling you right now, that interest rates aren't, you know, going up anymore. They've essentially flattened out for the past month. Commodities, aside from the oil price, are starting to roll over. And I think that's just absolutely a clear signs, in addition to all the other signs that we've seen for months and months now, that recession is coming. So I think in the short run, commodities potentially have some more downside in front of them as this, you know, recession trade continues, because I think we're going to get to the point where recession becomes obvious. The Fed is going to be forced to start talking about pausing. You know, they're probably going to raise 75 bips again next month, but then I think we could probably start hearing them talk about a pause at some time in the future. And you know, so over the next few months, we could see some commodity weakness through that process. But once we get through this kind of stagflationary recession, which I think nominal growth is not going to decline too much. I don't think it'll decline at all. I think it's only going to decline in real terms. And we start starting to look through a recession towards the next cyclical upturn, because markets are pricing, you know, 6 to 18 months in advance. Once they start looking through that to the next recovery, we're going to see commodities pick up again. And I don't think they're going to retrace too much of their gains over the next couple of months here, but I do think they're still vulnerable to some short-term weakness.
Well, Jesse, just with regards to the precious metals, as a safe haven, you mentioned that when inflation expectations, I guess, get adjusted to a more longer-term view that they're going to be more than 2 or 2.5% and it's going to be persistently high, that could be a driver for gold. But, you know, a lot of times people say it's an inflation hedge, and then other pundits will say it's really not an inflation hedge. It's really a chaos hedge against the policies and monetary policies of the central banks and the fiscal policies of the government. Do you think that when people realize the recession is going to be there and maybe we see more of a potential stock market correction, that that's when more money will rotate into the safe haven of the precious metals? Because so far, while they've held their own ground, many people are disappointed at how they performed in light of what we've seen the last 2 years.
I think, you know, precious metals are a confidence trade, and so are stocks. I mean, so is so many of these things right now. Buying the stock market today is essentially just an expression of confidence in the Fed's ability to navigate, and buying bonds today, expression in the confidence in the Fed's ability to rein in inflation without doing too much damage to the economy. Essentially, you're betting on the Fed being able to create a soft landing, buying stocks and bonds today. Buying gold today is the other side of that trade, right? It's saying, I don't think they're going to be able to rein in inflation and not do damage to the economy. And so I think, yeah, it's the flip side. You know, it's like my friend Diego Perilla has written many times, if stocks and bonds are the bubble, gold is the anti-bubble. And I really think that it's going to become, over the next couple of quarters, it's going to become obvious that the Fed's hands are tied. They can't prop up the stock market and rein in inflation. They just can't accomplish both of those things. And so they're going to have to pick one. And I think they're going to pick propping up asset prices, because the cost of another massive asset price bust is just too great. And it's debatable whether they're even capable of propping up asset markets. I don't even agree with that premise, but they're going to have to try. And in trying, they're going to abandon the inflation mandate. And that's when people are going to say, oh, my God, none of us own enough gold. And that's, you know, where you're going to see, you know, in Elliott wave terms, I think the wave three of this gold bull market. I think what we've seen, you know, from waves one and two is just the kind of the opening chapter of this bull market in gold. And wave three is always the strongest wave of any five wave move. And I think that's what's ahead of us.
So then, Jesse, driving down to the stocks, look, there's no denying that a lot of investors, especially gold investors, invest in the stocks too for some added leverage, some added torque to their investment. These stocks have just been crushed. The majors have held up a little better, but the mid-tiers, the juniors, some of these stocks are down 80, 90% from some of their highs. Some of these stocks are trading for less than cash in the bank. Why haven't these stocks been able to at least get some support in your eyes?
Well, because I think they are, you know, there's the precious metals themselves, and then the stocks are, to me, just the best indication of the sentiment towards precious metals, right? So you can watch when the stocks outperform the precious metals, that's a sign that investors are getting more bullish. When they underperform, investors are getting more bearish. And to me, you look at all the signs in precious metals right now, from the performance of the mining stocks to the commitment of traders report to anything. And the bearishness is really significant. And to me, it's a very encouraging contrarian signal that it's time to be adding to positions and building these things up, because these are the types of opportunities you get very rarely in bull markets to buy into weakness at times when investors are really giving up on the trade. And I think that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, hopefully we are at that point, because we just keep on seeing kind of a meltdown in these stocks. And you look at GDX, GDXJ, SIL, which are the ETFs for gold and silver stocks. Man, they're also breaking down. So it's been ugly for a lot of these investors. Hopefully that changes soon. But I don't know, this summer still could be pretty tough. Jesse, thank you as always for your time, buddy. It's always interesting hearing what you're looking at, what the key drivers are in your eyes, in that more big picture sense. Hope you have a great rest of your week, Jesse. Thanks again for your time.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first few segments with Jesse Felder. Jesse does a great job of outlining more the macro aspects of these markets and really trying to predict what's going to happen, especially with central bank policy. We're going to shift focus just a little bit more to the actual charts, as we are now chatting with Richard Postma, aka Doc. Doc, we chat with you at the end of every month, and at the end of last month, you said, look out, June's not looking that great, especially for the precious metals investors. And when we say precious metals investors, we are talking about more of the stocks, the underlying gold and silver stocks. So, Doc, as we ended June, boy, oh boy, we had breakdowns at probably the worst time to have breakdowns, at the very end of the month and the quarter, starting off with GDX, GDXJ. Both have broken below their 52-week support levels that came in more at the tail end of summer, early fall last year, and we're at multi-year lows now. I am not a technician. However, you've taught me a lot about reading charts, and quite simply, you look at breakdowns below key support levels, moving averages rolling over, and low volume. To me, it does not look good in any sense. Doc, what's your outlook for the gold stocks? Focus more on GDX and GDXJ first, please.
Well, Corey, you said early, I said, look out for June. Well, I'm going to tell you, look out for July. I think July is going to be really problematic. And what's not good here is that if you look at GDX, it's going to end the month at a low we haven't seen except going back to 2020. So it's closing below all of those intra-week lows that were at the end of last year and in January. And that is a very unhealthy picture. And both of them are doing that. And gold looks really weak here. And I've been saying right along that you don't get a move like we've seen in gold for this long on the monthly chart without it eventually where pricing doesn't touch the lower Bollinger band. And I think we're headed toward the lower Bollinger band on the monthly chart, which is around 1700. And I think the stocks have been telling you that. And now GDX, GDXJ, and gold are starting to break down, and so is silver.
Yeah, Doc, and when looking at GDXJ, there was a lot of support around that 37, 38 range because it had bounced off at about three or four times on the daily and the weekly charts. And just even if you pan back, you didn't want to see something below 35. It had even gotten down there just a couple weeks ago. But now we're down at 32 on the GDXJ. So do you think this is a capitulation move where it's going to just keep selling off and then bounce around and base for a while, not going to be a V-shaped recovery? Or do you think that it's getting a bit oversold here?
You can get little bounces, Shad, I think, as we move down. And by the way, GDXJ broke out, too, is going to have a closing week below anything we've seen in weeks. And you're going to get bounced back. But the path of least resistance now is definitely lower. It's interesting that on your some of your momentum indicators, or you look at RSI, it's already hitting the 30% line, and I think actually it's going to break below that, and we're going to be oversold for some time. And then I think once we bottom, and I've been saying this right along, I don't look for a V-shaped recovery because I think the conventional markets are in deep trouble too, and I don't think anything is going to help any of these markets for some time. I think we're going to, as we move into summer and the fall, we're going to be a lot lower, and it's going to be carnage across a lot of markets. And I said that in December of last year when everybody was so bullish that 2022, in my view, was going to be a very difficult year for all asset classes. And I think we're starting to experience that.
Yeah, it is even noteworthy to look at where the S&P is right now, pretty much giving up all those gains from 2021, which was a pretty easy year for investors, and it took 6 months to give up all those gains that it took 12 months to build on. Doc, what about silver stocks? Let's start with silver stocks. SIL, that is also breaking down in a fashion kind of like GDXJ to a greater degree, more so than GDX. Silver stocks are getting beat up as well. Any relief in sight for silver, or is silver at risk of even further underperforming this bear market?
Yeah, I think silver is going to be much more difficult than gold. At least With gold, you have it as a store of value and the prospect of inflation out there. Whereas, of course, we all know silver has that industrial component. I think it's going to get hit just as hard as gold, or maybe worse, because I think the CRB is starting to top out here, too. And we've seen copper break. I think we're going to see other areas break. We've seen uranium break. And I think what's going to happen with oil is I think oil will top the next 2 or 3 months. It won't be soon enough to save Mr. Biden and his Democratic Party. But I think we will start to see a topping, and I think we're going to start to see a break in oil later in the year. And that could be a positive, at least for these mining stocks, which are getting crushed with the inflation component, just like it's crushing the middle class right now.
Doc, I'd be curious to get your thoughts on some commentators, and even some technicians have pointed out that sometimes gold is countercyclical to the rest of the commodities, maybe not so much silver, but when you look at how the commodities have almost all run to record highs, you know, not just copper, but nickel, zinc, tin, iron. I mean, almost across the board, we've seen those kind of moves. It's interesting that silver didn't keep up, but the gold, you know, it hit an all-time high, but it really didn't ratchet as high as, say, some of these other commodities have. Is it possible that when the commodities roll over, that's actually what we would need to see to have a move, a shift over into the precious metals?
I think when we first see it, we might have some move yet lower in the precious metals. But I think the odds of them stabilizing here in a couple of months to 3 months, I think is very good. I don't see a massive sell-off in gold. I think it has to go down and test 1700. Then I'll be able to tell once we get down there what I think is going to happen at that point in time. But I'm still very constructive on gold. And the reason is, and I've said this many times, is because I'd love seeing the ADX on the monthly chart. On the monthly chart, it's meandered down very slowly, and that often means an underlying strength to a particular asset class. When you see on the long-term charts how slowly it takes to move down toward that zero midpoint on the MACD, and it's been very slow, and in fact, when you go back to 2011 and 12, when that market saw its low, I think it's going to take longer for this time around because that strength, the MACD is moving so slowly laterally to down. But that's a good sign telling you there's underlying strength to this market. And if it continues doing that, I think we're still going to be in good shape from the standpoint of this gold market not breaking down to levels that scare everybody.
So you're talking about gold in that aspect, right? Because gold, the argument being, has held up very well. Gold is mostly flat on the year, but again, that's not exciting. However, you compare it to everything else that's down multiple percentage, double-digit percentage, that has done well. Where do you see support for gold, and does it even matter where gold finds support when you carry it over to the stocks?
I think we see support eventually down around 1700, and then you hope it holds a little bit for a while. And like I said, when it gets to that area, I'm going to be able to tell a lot better whether I think we're going to really have another significant leg down. But I think we're headed for that, and that we may just muck around there for a while. And we're going to see that with these stocks. These stocks are telling you that gold is going lower here finally. They're just signaling it. And I know it's disconcerting to a lot of people, but we're going to be in this for a while. And I mentioned a long time ago that we're not going to see a turnaround from a bullish standpoint until at least 2023 at the earliest. So we're developing a trading range. And by the way, it's a lot better looking trading range than we saw in 2011 and 12, where you had a breakdown of almost, I believe it was about 45 or 46% from the top. This time, we're not even going to, we haven't seen anything below about 25%. So on a monthly basis, to compare to back then, we've held up pretty well.
Well, Doc, I know a lot of people are going to be very interested in your thoughts on the candy store. We've talked about the candy store being open as an analogy for when it's a good time to accumulate some of these really beat up mining stocks. And I'd be curious to find out, when you are nibbling, if you're expecting lower metals prices, not just in gold, but in silver, why not wait to nibble until you see a bottoming pattern? Or what is your process for accumulating these stocks on the dips?
Well, I'm still about 86% in cash. I bought a little bit, just almost as a watch list for me when I go over my portfolio. But you're going to, Shad, you're going to get some of these juniors for pennies on the dollar before this is over. We're going to see levels for some of them we have never seen. And it's going to be amazing, the prices that are going to be out there. And also, if you notice, Newmont is starting to break down. Kinross is breaking down. Finally, the big players are starting to break down. And Newmont has a ways to go. And I told you before that one of my sentinel stocks to watch is Hecla. And Hecla is in the process of breaking down. And I'll tell you right now, I would not be surprised to see Hecla move down to $2 to $3 a share.
Wow. So some more pain across the board. And unfortunately, it's been all the stocks. Even the majors haven't withstood this pullback. Doc, a lot of this hinges, or a lot of this bear market is hinging on the Fed and their willingness to continue to tighten, even in the face of softening and weak economic data. Quite frankly, inflation is still staying higher. There are a lot of people, not just precious metals bugs, that are saying, look, the Fed is going to have to switch course because the economy can't withstand that. The U.S. is going to be in a recession, yada, yada. A lot of different examples and excuses why the Fed is going to switch course. But Powell seems to be sticking to his guns, saying that they are going to keep on hiking until they get inflation under control. Do you think Powell is lying to us, or do you think that we're going to have rate hikes probably through the end of this year?
I don't think Powell is blowing smoke this time. And there were so many people that took the easy out because they looked at the past and said, oh, he'll blink at the first sign of a problem. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think he's serious. He's going to be Volcker-esque in some ways. And he's going to cause some pain in a lot of these asset classes. And I think he realizes he doesn't have many options. He wants to get up to close to 3 to 4% on the Fed fund rate, and he's got a ways to go. If he stops before that, all heck's going to break loose in these markets, and they're going to lose all kinds of credibility. I think he has to, this time around, set an example, and I think he's going to continue to raise rates. I believe July is the next FOMC meeting. And then I think we wait until September. So July and August, if he raises rates 50 to 75 percentage points again, we've got a couple months to wait expectingly for the September meeting. And that's going to not be a particularly positive thing for these markets. But I think he's going to continue to raise in the face of a recession, which we're in already, and we're going to get a lot harder recession than people are aware of, I believe.
Well, Doc, with so many people waiting for this to play through, not just the July meeting, but the September meeting of the Fed, where they're going to potentially raise rate 75 basis points, is there anything that has your interest in the interim, or is it just a waiting game, or are you shorting some sectors at present? What are you doing personally in your portfolio?
I'm usually not a day trader, but I every time we get a rally in the stock market, I've been shorting it, and I've been doing pretty well doing that. So every time, and then I'll take my positives from it, and I get out and I wait for the next move up, and then I hit it again. So far, that's been a real positive for me. And otherwise, I'm trying to ascertain which precious metal stocks, when we do bottom, are the ones that I would really like to focus on. because when we do have a move higher someday, I want to be involved in those stocks because we're going to, Shad, get them at prices that are going to be just awesome. But then I don't think we'll get that V-shaped recovery. There will be enough damage where I think we'll see a bottoming pattern for a while, and then we gradually start to move up after we bottom. So we're going to be into this well into 2023.
So it sounds like investors are going to have some time, a bit of warning in this bottoming pattern. Undoubtedly, I'm sure investors are going to be pessimistic and potentially saying, oh, look, this pattern is just setting up for another leg lower. But Doc, what I'm hearing from you is that there is going to be pain here throughout this year. And then sometimes next year, we're going to have a process where simply markets move sideways.
Yes. And I think there's going to be so much damage done that the wealth effect will have been decimated in this country. And you're going to see this in housing, too. Just talking to realtors in my area, they're not getting the multiple offers like they were, and there's no escalation clauses going on anymore. So it's cracking already. And so once that wealth effect is really impacted, I think it's going to take time to recover again for people to get their confidence back.
Well, Doc, one other thing I'd like to get your thoughts on is, do you think in a recessionary environment, if we've got two negative GDP quarters in a row, that's the kind of environment where we may see a sea change in how people invest? So far, everybody's been in the passive investing, the stock market can only go up, buy the dip mode for about the last dozen years. But now with this kind of a shakeup, do you think, not just in the precious metal sector, but in other sectors, we're going to see people be more selective in the stocks they pick versus just passive investing? And what areas of interest do you think are going to garner the most interest in a recessionary backdrop?
I think they are going to be more selective after this trauma because they're going to have less dollars, first of all. And I think they're going to be more selective. And we're going to get back to real earnings because I think we're entering a real earnings recession here. And you wouldn't know it by listening to Wall Street, but I think we're going to know by the third quarter that the earnings recession is upon us. And that's why a lot of these stocks are going to get hit even harder on the conventional market. And I think people, after experiencing this, forget about the algorithms a little bit. They're going to become much more selective and careful. When you get a tremendous carnage, it changes behavior for a while, but then people start forgetting again. You know, you got your usual staples in a recession, you know, food and all, and the ones that we're used to, but I'm going to be looking at, I've been looking at certain biotech stocks, and I've been buying a couple of them very carefully here, and they're pretty close to being bottomed out already. They were one of the first that got hit really hard, and I'm going to broaden my portfolio. I'm not going to go all in on the precious metals like I have in the past. So I'm going to look at some of the tech stocks, and that's where I'm going to focus. And I'm going to try to stay with some solid companies as we go forward. But to close the month like we're doing and closing at lows that we haven't seen is not healthy going into July. So just don't be buying these dips because it's going to be a long time before you should be ready to start purchasing some of these stocks.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Doc, I have to say, man, month after month, we seem to talk to you and it seems to be pretty bearish, but it's been the correct call. This whole year has been bearish for really every sector except for energy, but we're even seeing energy end this month and quarter on the back foot. So overall, again, just a tough market, a bearish market overall, and sounds like this month that we're in now, July, is going to be tough again. Sure wish we had better news for everybody, but Doc, I do appreciate your honesty and how accurate you have been. Everybody, thank you for tuning in to this weekend show. Looking forward to the rest of summer. Hopefully you all got out or get out to have a nice long weekend. Take your mind off these markets and be sure to join us early in the week as Shad and I will be back still trying to keep everybody as updated as we can on these markets. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. Doc, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.